Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Laveau. As winter draws near and temperatures drop, Europe finds itself to be very vulnerable. Rejection of Russian energy is not only slowing Europe's economy, but also bringing on a recession. What's worse, Europe's economic woes are self-inflicted. Is Europe attempting suicide? Crosstalking Europe in Crisis, I'm joined by my guest, Michael Hudson in New York. He's a professor of economics at the University of Missouri, Kansas City, as well as author of Forgive Them Their Debts. In Paris, we have Jean Bricmont. He is a political commentator. And in London, we cross to Adriel Consanta. He is founder of AK Consulting and a foreign affairs analyst. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Let's go to Michael first in New York. I'm titling this program Attempted Suicide. Given what's going on in the last 6 months in Europe and in the Western world in general, do you set an appropriate title for what's going on?
Well, I'm not sure that they are realizing that it's suicide. It's more so, they're following a U.S. policy, which is the U.S. wants to kill Europe, really take it over. The Americans are the great beneficiaries of this, especially the oil industry that is cleaning up as the oil prices go up. And that's strengthening the dollar. The euro is going down. The British pound is absolutely plunging. It's right now $1.15 this morning. And apparently, the Europe is run by NATO, not by the elected politicians. And Ms. Baerbock, the foreign secretary, said yesterday in Poland that she doesn't care what the European voters want. She's going to support Ukraine. Well, imagine a politician saying they don't care what the voters say, that she's in there and she's going to do what she's agreed with the United States to do, boycott Russia.
Let me go to Paris. Jean, I mean, how do you explain that? I mean, I agree with everything that Michael just said there, but I thought Europe and America were comrades in arms when it comes to their proxy war against Russia. But, you know, the two players that get the short end of the stick are obviously Ukraine and Europe. But, you know, Europe just seems to continue to kowtow to Washington when it's not in their interest whatsoever. Is there any explanation for that? Go ahead in Paris.
Well, I want to emphasize, you know, Putin has spoken about the empire of lies, and there was somebody whose name I've forgotten around World War I who said that the problem in wars is that the politician lied to the media and then believe what they read in the newspaper. I mean, the amount of lies that we have been fed to, and I think are believed by many of our politicians and lead to our self-destruction, is enormous. First of all, they say that the war was unprovoked. It was not unprovoked. There was a military buildup. There was a refusal to apply the Minsk Agreement. Mersheimer, who is a mainstream commentator, has said that repeatedly since 2014. Jeffrey Sachs said he went at the end of 2021 to the White House to tell them, you know, this is going to lead to war. And the White House said, we are not going to discuss with the Russians, no way. That's the first thing. Then they say that the Russian economy is going to collapse. They all say that. Macron said that. Biden says that. Le Maire, who is the French Minister of Economy, said that it didn't collapse. Now they say we will have to suffer for democracy. And so nobody said that in the beginning. Nobody warned us that there would be any cost. No, no, the Russians are going to collapse. Now, suppose we are told that we have to suffer to end the war in Yemen or to end the war in Syria, where the Americans are increasing their bases in the country, where Israel is bombing civilian airports, etc. If we were told to suffer for that, everybody would reject that. But we are supposed to suffer for democracy in Ukraine, where there is no democracy.
Well, let me go to Adriel on that point there. Okay, let's talk about this suffering, okay? But it's not this is an elite-driven war in the West. This is what they want. This is a proxy war against Russia. Well, Ukraine is a footnote in all of this. And so we have to suffer. But no, the people that make the decisions don't suffer. Everybody else does. And that's what makes this conflict different for the West, because nobody really suffered for Afghanistan or Iraq in the West, okay? But now it's all coming home, and you have to suffer. But we're not going to suffer. Go ahead in London. Let me go to London here. Well, go ahead, London.
Well, you're absolutely right, Peter. But at the same time, we have to bear in mind that we, as a collective societies of in Europe, in European Union, we are complicit in this great lie. I mean, we are talking about the politicians that they're lying to us, but. What about the economists? What about the public intellectuals? What about the journalists and economists who are perfectly aware what is happening and they are complicit and taking part in this great lie? I mean, no one in the Western newspapers, mainstream newspapers, and public intellectuals have risen a voice against it. I mean, everyone is just supporting it because of the indoctrination with this liberal indoctrinations throughout the years here in the in European Union, in United Kingdom, and across the West, some of the very intelligent people, and I will use the Nassim Taleb assertion calling intelligent yet idiots, people who are well versed in economics, in politics, in geopolitics, are still believing that it is worth suffering to achieve some illusory goal, which is not going to be achieved.
Well, Adriel, I'm glad you brought this up. Let me just ask you real quickly here before I go to Michael. You know, particularly with this crisis that's been generated in Ukraine, I am really sick and tired of smart people saying really stupid things, okay? And it's empirically provable, okay? Michael, I mean, you're the economist here. Europe has decided to deindustrialize. Is that a good idea? I mean, lack of competitiveness? I mean, does it want to become a backwater? And to talk about Washington winning, do they want to win a part of the world that used to be rich that is growing, that's going to become very, very poor very, very quickly if they don't change course? Michael in New York.
Well, why there have not been official critiques of supporting Ukraine, the Financial Times and the other papers have made it very clear that in England, the cost of heating your home is going to go up 5,000 pounds per year. They've said half of the pubs in England are going to have to close. They haven't talked about deindustrializing. They're talking, first of all, about forcing most of the wage-earning population into debt. Or is simply unable to heat the homes. They're talking about closing down much of the consumer economy. In Germany, they're talking about closing. They've closed down the German steel industry. Because steel uses energy. They've closed down the fertilizer we talked before. They've closed down the glass industry. In Italy, is especially hardly heard. So what the press is talking about is how Europe. European industry is being dismantled, and once it's dismantled, it cannot be started again. That's the important thing. When a steel industry or company closes down, it's very hard to start it up again. So we're talking about a permanent loss of markets, and the Americans say, well, we're going to be the gainers because, number one, we can produce steel. We are importing all the oil from Russia that we want. We control our companies own steel companies abroad, so the American-controlled companies in Brazil.
But Michael, let me interrupt you just for a second here. But hang on, Jean. But you know, if this is what they're doing to Europe, then Europe will not be a consumer for American goods. So it's kind of a double loss here. Let me, Jean, you wanted to jump in Paris. Go ahead.
Well, because now they say that, oh, the sanctions didn't work. The Russian economy didn't collapse. They will work in the long term. How do they know that? You see, why should we trust that? The problem of having these smart people in charge, I don't know. You see, if you take Habeck, for example, who used to be somebody who was writing children's books, he has no training in economy, and he says things like, oh, companies are not going to be bankrupt. They will just not sell for a while. Okay, so if your bakery doesn't sell for a while, what happens? Okay, they're not going to go bankrupt. How come? You see, and then they say they're going to give money, but where does the money come from? They're going to print more money, and printing money or raise taxes. None of these things are going to solve the fact that they have a lack of energy, and the lack of energy comes. I mean, why did they destroy the nuclear energy industry? I mean, in France, they, The Greens managed to kill one of the most advanced and technologically advanced and secure nuclear energy. This is, I'm sorry to say, this is a religion. I mean, you know, there's
where does this come from? I mean, this sounds like an ideological obsession. Damn the facts. Yeah. I mean, this is what I can't get my head around this, okay? I mean, you know, everyone is aware of what's going on in the real economy here, but there's no policy shift. You have this Liz Truss. I mean, oh my God, they're going from bad to worse in the UK. I mean, this is a craven choice. That's what makes this so bizarre. Michael.
It is ideological, but they have also calculated how the United States will gain. From France, you mentioned the magic word bankruptcy. The real losers in this will be many of the banks in Europe, because the banks are going to have many of their customers defaulting. They're already default on bank debt. So what we're talking about is not simply deindustrialization, but a bank crisis. The Americans now have a chance to come in and have the American banks buy up the European banks. So what this is, yes, it's going to knock Europe down. The Americans can maintain control. They're not really concerned about losing the consumer markets. They're concerned about control and control of other countries. And they imagine that this will somehow strengthen their diplomatic position by being able to control Europe. So it's the ideology is not simply anti-Russian. The ideology is one wanting to control all the rest of the world, because if you cannot control it, they might do something that the Americans don't like. That's the mentality. That's the ideology at work here.
Yeah, it doesn't have much to do with people, does it? I mean, that's the least of their concerns here. All right, gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on the crisis in Europe. Stay with RT.
Ощущение, что эти вот последние, да, 8-10 лет, время застыло.
Не так просто нас эвакуировать, потому что дети с тяжелыми диагнозами, которые нуждаются там в индивидуальном подходе.
Это, ну, это шок просто для человека, который их не видел. У него глаза в ужасе, он говорит, как вы тут работаете, быстрее, это понятно, ну, и уйти отсюда.
Говорит, это не будет действенно. Поэтому наш вариант только ампутация.
Всего нам удалось около 150 детей посмотреть. Понятно, что это капля в море, детей гораздо больше.
Как я говорю, неудобные дети. Вот они неудобные, ни для кого.
Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaBelle. To remind you, we're discussing the crisis in Europe. Okay, let's go back to our guest in Paris. I'd like to quote something the French President Macron said a few days ago. France is at a, quote, tipping point, and the country is essentially facing now, quote, an era of abundance coming to an end. That's an extraordinary thing for a major Western leader to say. Basically, the show is over. Live with less. Our abundance, what we presented to the world as a model has come to an end. I mean, how did that guy get reelected? How have any of these people get elected or reelected when you say the era of abundance is over? Because the Global South doesn't believe that. That's why they're continuing to buy fossil fuels, because they want their future to be prosperous. But Europe has given up. Jean, how do you explain that?
Well, of course, it has provoked many negative reactions, since there are 10 million people in France who live under the poverty line. And of course, again, as I said, there was not a word of apology for the fact that this is a result of the sanctions, and they deny even that it's a result of the sanctions. And when the sanctions were taken, it was going to be effort-free. I mean, they weren't going to suffer. The Russians were going to suffer. But you see, on the ideological aspect, I think there is also the question of German revanchism, which the French don't understand. I mean, the Germans always, I think, had in the back of their mind a sort of revenge for World War II, which was also a revenge for World War I, if you remember. But so their main enemy is Russia. And you see, the revenge did not come from the old conservative right, the CSU, Strauss, etc. It came from the progressive, the Greens and the Social Democrats, who were against the nuclear buildup in the 80s, and they were for the peace. And they tricked, I think, Gorbachev and other Soviet leaders, thinking that Germany now is a peaceful country. We can all live together happily thereafter. And of course, what happens now is that Germany wants to take control over the whole of Europe, orient Europe against Russia, which they did before, by the way. And of course, they have miscalculated, or the idea that the result would be so favorable to them, because they seem to destroy their economy. And that, of course, not going to be a strength for them. But they certainly thought they were going to ruin Russia and, in a sense, get the revenge. And the revenge came, as I say, from the more progressive, or supposed to be progressive.
Yeah, but
you see, there's a lot of racism also, because there is this idea, first of all, that these guys, the Russians, are really good for nothing. Okay, and then there's also this idea that they don't have the right that the Americans have, the French, the Germans. If the French, German, English minority was in another country and was subjected to the treatment that was inflicted on the people of the Donbas, who are basically Russians, for 8 years, it wouldn't take 8 years. The British invaded the Falkland Islands once Argentina took it over. The Americans attacked Grenada because there were American students, American medical students there. I mean, it wouldn't last a day before.
Well, Jean, hypocrisy is their calling card here. You know, Michael, I want you to reflect upon what Macron said, because this proves, without a doubt in my mind, that neoliberalism has collapsed for the interests of the vast majority of the people that it rules over. I mean, that's an admission. That's an admission right there. And what does it talk about, considering what Jean had to say, what it has to say about European unity and Western solidarity? I don't see it at all. I mean, if the elites lose all this, they don't care. It's to turn off the lights. It's really a very, very cynical approach. Go ahead, Michael.
Well, when you say that the abundance is over, what that means is it's time for an austerity program, an IMF austerity program. And the real question is, what are Africa and South America and South Asia going to do? Are they going to be a part of this, or are they going to say, we need an alternative to austerity programs? So there's no need at all for the era of abundance to end for us. There's no technological problem. There is a military and a financial problem, and a problem of American policy that brought this about. The problem is, will China, Russia, India, and Iran, and their neighboring countries create a set of alternative institutions to the American neoliberal IMF and World Bank and AID? Are they going to create a new kind of an economy on different lines from the West? That really is what the question is. And so Europe is giving a demonstration of how not to run a country. And I hope that other parts of the world are looking at this and say, there is an alternative. Margaret Thatcher was wrong. It's up to Russia, China, India, and the other countries to create an alternative set of institutions independent from dollar diplomacy.
Well, I think that's very much already happening. We have BRICS and so many other organizations that it's in through time. And this is an important catalyst to move it along further, because of sanctions and secondary sanctions, nobody wants to get involved in that. You know, fiat that comes out of Washington only serves their interests and no one else's. Jean, you know, is there any way, maybe this is a silly question, but is there any way back to undo this, unring this bell, this craven choice that the Europeans have taken? Because, you know, the weather's cooling down here in Moscow. It's going to be cold here pretty soon. And what happens in the East, weather-wise, just goes to the West. It's only a matter of time. Go ahead in Paris.
Of course, but as I told you before, the problem with these European decision makers in the European Union is they have no legitimacy whatsoever. De Gaulle or Churchill or some people like that, whatever one thinks of them, had legitimacy for historical reasons. But these people are not elected. They're not even Macron has some sort of support, a minority support, but there's some support. But these people have not been elected. So their only reason to be there is their expertise. They are supposed to be experts, okay? But if they say, no, we're completely wrong, then they can go begging in the street because there's nothing that legitimizes them. And so they have no reverse gear, you know, they can't. I mean, I think it's only going to come from protests in the street, but the protests in the street must be pretty serious because, you know, they'll mobilize the police and the army and so on. You see what they do in Holland already with the farmers. I mean, it's going to be pretty tough because before they admit defeat, before they admit, and of course they keep on saying, well, there's a Kherson offensive which is working and now there's a new offensive near Kharkov and then Kherson offensive is already over. I mean, it's going to be very bloody. I hope it's going to change, but I agree. I mean, you see, the other thing with the sanctions, that not only they don't work, they destroy our economy. They don't destroy the Russian economy. And they push Russia to be ever closer to China and to India. They have joint maneuver. Who could dream that India and China would have joint maneuvers?
Yeah.
How dream that there would be a rapprochement between Turkey and Syria or between Saudi Arabia and Iran? All these things happening now as a result in part of Russian diplomacy. And that's the worst dream from the worst nightmare, from the point of view of Europeans. China getting close to Russia is the Kissinger nightmare. And they're provoking that. So they're provoking everything that can go wrong for them. And probably they will even provoke popular revolt. But that we have to wait and see.
All right, let's go back to Michael in New York. Well, where do we go from here? Because there seems to be an admission of defeat. They don't have any tools left in their toolbox. They're essentially telling everyone we have to suffer. And they have no vision for the future. I mean, what is going, you know, after the conflict has come to an end, what then? Sanctions will remain. They have no plan. And particularly since they with great haste went into this, not thinking of the consequences. I have no hope that these people know what they're doing moving forward. Michael.
Well, it's obvious now that you cannot simply roll things back and go back to the way things were before and say, okay, Russia, go back to your boundaries. Let's just have peace. U.S. officials have said the Ukraine war is only a catalyst for what's going to be a 20-year war. And that 20-year war is going to be how long that we think it'll take for us to take over Russia, China, India, and Iran, and the whole world. And until we do that, we're not going to stop. We're not going backwards. We're not going to peace. We're going to continue the Ukraine war to continue to bleed Russia. Every Ukrainian who dies absorbs at least one bullet, and that's going to leave Russia with one less bullet. We're going to continue to fight, and this is only the opening strategic ploy in what's going to be a long, long, ongoing fight. And so it's up to the rest of the world to say, what are we going to do to respond respond to all this? The West only has a plan that it wants to control. What is our plan going to be to create an alternative to the whole post-war neoliberal order that has left us in debt to the IMF, in debt to bondholders with money we can't pay now that the oil prices and food prices are going up? What are we going to do to create a new world, because we can't go back to the old world? That is over. So we're in really a new development where countries are going to be making their own fate.
Michael, there's one little wrinkle in all of this, and I'll go to Jean here. What happens when people say no to what Michael just said? Because the Global South is saying no, and the level of immiseration is only increasing in Europe. No is going to be the most obvious answer, but then that's when you have an authoritarian reaction. Control of the military, of the police, of big tech, social media. We have seen it all before. I'll give the last part to you, Jean, in Paris. Go ahead.
Well, I like the idea of a 20-year-long war, because that's exactly what happened in Afghanistan with the success that we could observe last year. So I think I wish them well if they want to tackle Russia, China, India, and other countries after what they have done in Afghanistan. You know, I think they miscalculated, they misunderestimated, to speak like George Bush, the resilience of the rest of the world, and they misjudged the Russians, and that happened to a German leader of Austrian origin on 22nd of June, 1941. So it's a repeat of that mistake, I think.
Well, it's very interesting here is that there seems to be no historical memory of things of what goes wrong. Michael, you know, last 30 seconds to you. They don't have any knowledge of history. That's why they're groping into the future. 25 seconds to you.
Well, that's exactly the point. All of this has happened before. And the only solution is going to be to make a clean slate and to start all over again. And you can't start all over again if you let the United States have veto power over anything you do, as it has in the World Bank and the IMF. You have to start a new organization without U.S. veto power, and there is an alternative. But saying no isn't enough. Beyond saying no, you have to say, there is another way of doing things, and you have to develop a whole set of shadow institutions and alternative institutions. That's going to be the next stage that'll evolve over the next year.
I think it's happening as we speak here. A fascinating discussion. I'm sorry we lost our guest in London. Many thanks to my guests in Paris and in New York. And thanks to our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, crosstalk rules.